Let's see what the stew has for us today.
Welcome to the Gnomecast, the Gnome Stew's tabletop gaming advice podcast. Here we talk with the other gnomes about gaming things to avoid becoming part of the stew, so I guess we better be good.
This episode is brought to you by the awesome Patreon backers of the Gnome Stew Patreon, like the amazing Bob Queck, James Malloy, and Wesley Botham. Hi, James. Thank you for supporting us. James is amazing.
Today we have Troy, Taylor, and myself, and we're going to talk about gaming in the great outdoors. Before we dive into the main topic, let's ask our Get to Know a Gnome question. What outdoorsy place would you like to visit that you haven't gotten a chance to get to yet? How about you, Troy?
Well, my family has got a lot of places we like to go because we go camping quite a bit. We have set our sights on West Virginia, the New River Gorge area, which is beautiful all times of the year. Maybe when we get a little bit older and the kids are out of the house, we're thinking about a tour of the Southwest on the old Route 66.
Ooh.
And because I love the Revolutionary War history, the upstate New York area around Lake Champlain keeps calling me. So that's pretty much what we do. Although, you know, this year it's Wisconsin and Minnesota. Those are our go-to places.
Are those places you go to pretty regularly?
We've been in the last couple of years. I mean, we're going to Wisconsin this year outside Milwaukee. Mainly just to do a sort of a camping and city trip. But one of the most memorable vacations we've had was to Bemidji, Minnesota, and going to see the source of the Mississippi River.
Ooh, that's cool. Now, when you go camping, do you go to like regular campgrounds, or you go camp out in the full wilderness, or how glamorous is your camping?
It depends on the situation, actually. Sometimes we went to Washington, D.C. area. And there's not many, you know, wilderness type areas to camp there. So we ended up in what is known as a yurt, you know. So instead of being out in the Siberian plains in a yurt, we were in Washington, D.C. in a yurt. But Minnesota, we love cabin camping when we can. We also have a tent that can serve for the entire family.
Well, that's really cool.
I live in Minnesota, so like I definitely know just how beautiful camping can be up here.
And the mosquitoes.
Yes, that's true.
How about you, Taylor? Where's an outdoorsy place you'd like to visit that you haven't gotten to yet?
Oh, man. All of my, like, camping wish list things are things that are just, like, extreme that I'm sure that, like, without thousands of dollars in prep, I would be absolutely miserable. But, like, I would love to go to Antarctica.
Ooh.
And just, like, the snow and, like, just the rocky wasteland I've heard is down there. And just to be on that continent where, like, I know more and more people with the ease of travel and like scientific research and stuff that's going on down there. More and more people are actually going, but it's still like a place that not many people have been to. So that would be my like bucket list travel camping destination.
That's really cool. How about you with camping? How primitive is your camping?
So it kind of depends on the people that I am with, because I've camped from everywhere from like a plastic tarp over a sleeping bag on the rocky ground to like a full on plastic like bubble igloo and an air mattress that's a foot and a half thick and like Wi-Fi and everything. But that's been like dependent on which family members or friends I'm bringing with. My best memories of camping, I used to go to the Boundary Waters at least once a summer when I was younger, and we would just do like bare tent, wake up and be soaked wet, jump out in our like wet hiking boots on canoes and just go do 20 miles in a day.
That's really cool though.
Yeah.
For me, I think the outdoorsy place I'd like to get to that I haven't gotten to is actually Hawaii.
Ooh.
You know, just the beaches and mm-hmm. the mountains there and the greenery. It's the company I work for, we capture aerial imagery of Hawaii, and I just look at the beaches and just be like, yeah, I could spend a couple of days there.
Yeah, if I had to, I guess.
Yeah, it's like, and just, you know, I'm not necessarily the outdoorsy athletic type, so I wouldn't necessarily want to climb that giant staircase that goes to the top of one of the peaks.
Yeah.
But I'd still love to be able to get to the top of the peak and take some photographs and pictures of just the island and the ocean surrounding it. It's like that's kind of what I would like to get to do. And as a frame of reference, my experience with camping is very, very limited. When I was growing up, we would regularly go to a cottage on the lake. So there was a lot of time spent outdoors and in the water and all that, but it wasn't necessarily, mm-hmm. you know, full-on outdoorsy camping.
I think that that's still outdoorsy. Like, if you get wholesome memories of being outside, that's enough.
Yeah, and pretty much spending the entire day in the lake. You know, I was just such a fish as a kid. One of my proudest memories from my 13th summer was the fact that I went swimming every single day that summer, even though we didn't own a pool.
Yes.
So let's get into our main topic. Today we're going to talk about taking your game outside into the great outdoors. Now, like I said, unless you've got a swimming pool, I'm not the most outdoorsy person, and you certainly won't find me going camping and sleeping on the ground. But not everyone is afraid of getting nature on them, so let's take some time and talk about how and why and how to take your game outside. Taylor originally proposed the subject, and I thought it was pretty cool, and I know Troy has written some articles about how to take your game outside, so let's get into that. Let's dig into the why, first of all. Why would you want to take your game outside?
So definitely, I think that that's a good question, because, like, being outside comes with its challenges for, like, running games as we, like, traditionally think about them. But, like, all of the things that we talked about in our opening are my answer of why. Because there's a strong, like, emotional feeling that we have when we think about our memories of spending time camping or, like, being outdoors. For a lot of games that, like, have nature as, like, a focal point, it can really be great and immersive to be, like, outside. And I think LARPs do this really well in terms of using their space to great effect. So you get LARPs that are outside to, like, simulate the actual natural environment that you're in so that you're not trying to pretend while in, like, a room with four walls that you're out doing, like, an epic woods battle or whatever. But I think that just kind of being outside in nature also kind of reframes where your head is at, and it allows you to open up your mind to, like, different potential avenues of gameplay that you might not think of when you're, you know, doing your traditional sit down at a table playing a game.
I know one thing I was thinking of is that, you know, honestly, especially living up here in the Northeast, mm-hmm. we get so limited a range of time in the year when it's nice enough to just be outside mm-hmm. that you may as well make as much use of that as you can, even if it's just taking your game out onto the patio mm-hmm. or out into the backyard on a picnic table instead of inside the house. What type of games do you think are really conducive to taking outside?
I think that games that are the best to be played outside are games that are, you know, maybe not as traditional or, like, crunchy games. Things that don't need a bunch of, like, rule books to play outdoors. The, like, indie game and kind of freeform space right now has a lot of games that are really great to play outdoors. Some that are even, like, specifically written to be played outdoors. So Hannah Schaefer has two games that are really fantastic. The first actually just fits on a business card. It's called Birds Are Amazing. And essentially what you do is, while you're outdoors, like, hiking or even just, like, hanging out outside, if you see a bird, you look at that bird, you say what it is, and then you say, like, a cool fact about that bird. And the cool facts don't, like, this is breaking the kayfabe of the game or, like, breaking the reality or verisimilitude of the game. But, like, you don't actually have to say true things, but you have to, like, you have to believe them. In, like, the soul of your heart. So, like, if you see an owl, you can look at that owl and just be like, that owl went to community college and was on the dean's list. And then you spend time talking about that owl's experience being on the dean's list at this college or, like, whatever. Or you could say, like, that's a barn owl and they fly so silently that their prey doesn't even know that they've been captured. And just, like, expand on that. Hannah also has a game called For the Blank of the Pumpkin King, which is essentially a scavenger hunt Mad Lib that you play outdoors in a park. So you are servants of this pumpkin king trying to gather things for this Halloween celebration. And that might mean, like, going out and actually finding physical things. It might mean going up to people in the park and acting as a servant of the pumpkin king and asking them questions or asking them to play with you or do things. Which I think that might still, like, I think that I have a lot of confidence when I'm outdoors and, like, being, you know, comfortable with myself, but that gives me the kind of, like, oh, I don't know if I'd do that, but
yeah, I'm sitting there going, oh, they'd think I'm so crazy.
Yep. But that's really cool to like think of this, the way that these games are playing with space. I could just talk about games that are like written this way for like all of time. So if you guys have stuff, jump in. But I think that there's a lot of games that do really cool stuff being outdoors.
Troy, since you wrote some of the articles on how to bring stuff outside, why are some of the reasons you like to like try and bring the game outside?
Why do I want to go outside? Well, because in the Midwest, just getting outside after a long winter is good for the soul. The other reason, I think, is that it's one of the few opportunities you have in role-playing to sort of match up wilderness exploration style games with actually being outdoors. Mm-hmm. And the advantage of that, of course, is that you don't have to paint a picture with your words. You're there. And even if the wind is blowing and throwing your character sheet hither and thither, and even if, you know, you don't have your usual setup, just being with friends outside just sort of, you know, gives you a different perspective on how to role play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that. One of my fondest memories from when I was first getting into gaming, that first year, it was basically through my senior year of high school, and one of my fondest memories is actually taking the game from inside the house, because my GM, my friend that was running, his aunt was just like, "It is too nice out, go outside." Mm-hmm. And she like threw all of us outside like we were like 10 years old, even though we were like 17, 18, 19. And we ended up setting up in the barn, basically, to play the game. And that's one of my fondest memories from that time period, is the smell of the outdoors and the hay and the woods right behind us with the bugs making their noises in the trees and all that, just as we were playing this game where we're, you know, venturing through the wilderness and into a dungeon where we got murdered horribly because it was 1987, and that's what happened in D&D games.
But. Yeah.
Along with that, I mean, you don't even have to go far afield or find an exotic location. In our little county here in Illinois, we have a conservation district, mm-hmm. and they have a shelter set up about a mile and a half outside of one of the small villages here. You're within 25 yards of the woods. It's an easy drive, but it's a beautiful shelter. So you're just sitting there at a picnic table and you can game, and you're still getting a bit of the feel of the wilderness, and you don't have to venture very far to do that. Mm-hmm. But we are pretty blessed. We have three state parks within 13 miles of us, each of them offering different environments to hike and camp in. Starved Rock State Park gives you a giant bluff. Matheson gives you dells. And Buffalo Rock State Park has the mounds.
Ooh.
So getting all three of those within real driving distance, in fact, all three parks are within walking distance of each other.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a great opportunity to go and spend a few hours just gaming with friends.
I have, they're not doing it this year because of logistic reasons, but I have some friends who have for the past, I think 3 years, done their own kind of indie games day, which is basically they have a friend who has basically a giant field overlooking, I think, whichever the Finger Lakes Ithaca is on. Mm-hmm. So it's on the hill overlooking the lake, and they basically just play outside that day. They get about three or four games running, and they're just playing in this field. You know, and everyone's welcome to bring a tent and camp out overnight and start gaming again the next day. But it's like their own little mini con outside, which I thought was pretty cool.
I love that.
Yeah.
And I think we've been talking a lot from the perspective of like, we want to play a game, let's do it outside. But I think that there's also something to talk about to say like, we are outside, let's play a game. So like, my role playing, quote unquote, start was like going on camping trips or being at a summer camp and then telling choose your own adventure stories to my friends, like while we were outside or just hanging out. That's something that you can do to like have fun on your hike, to like break up the silence, to keep talking with friends, to just like celebrate being outdoors too.
Yeah, I like that idea too. So let's take a moment and switch gears and talk about how.
Mm-hmm.
How to take this outside. You had a great article on this, Troy. What are some of your pieces of advice on the best way to make this actually work for people?
So I think that with outdoor games, there's really like two categories of of outdoor games. And it's useful to think of these two categories when you break it down, because they each have a different opportunity for the experience. And I think that Taylor's talked a little bit about it with the hiking games and such, but you know, those sound to me like campfire games. Those are mostly storytelling, brief, something that a good storyteller can grab your attention with and does so in the way you tell a good ghost story. You know, time to get together, let's hear a story. And if you have any resolution with those, it's usually something very simple, like rock, paper, scissors. And the reason I talk about campfire games is because if you've ever been at a campfire, you have no visibility. The only thing you can see is the campfire. And so it's a great opportunity to do that storytelling experience, but there's no fiddly bits. You can't have any gear, character sheets, anything like that. It has to be very much just a narrative thing that you're doing. The other category would be your patio games, something you do in the garden, at a picnic table, around the swimming pool, maybe as part of a larger party. You know, maybe you're having a guest over and some of you are doing a role play experience and other people probably have board games or just hanging out at the pool and talking. But the patio games do give you the opportunity, I think, to at least bring some of the gear that comes with tabletop role playing outside. There, you can do character sheets. You can do miniatures a little bit. And, you know, there's room for dice. And there's also room for a grill going and get yourself some food.
That grill's really important.
It is.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's another aspect that we haven't talked about yet is the outdoor grilling and cooking area and like how amazing outdoor food is.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. There's one of the things I look forward to with summer the most is the smell of that grill and, you know, cooking burgers and hot dogs and, you know, whatever else the cook has decided they're going to throw on the grill.
Yeah.
And drinks. You know, I have to have a cooler, too. Stay hydrated. the casual atmosphere, though, of that gaming, though, does lend itself much more to a different style of game. It, you know, it's really not the place for your campaign's culminating episode. It's sort of more of a one-shot or something you'd use. It's almost akin to a convention game because it's really great if you bring pre-generated characters that are laminated.
Oh, yeah.
And whatever resolution mechanic you're using, even if you raid the Yahtzee box for dice and you're playing a D20-style fantasy game, just roll your 3D6s and let that substitute for your D20. I would recommend clipboards or at least a piece of cardboard that you can clamp a sheet to with either paper clips or clothespins or those black clips that are like paper clips but are thicker. I've had a good experience a few times actually using terrain outside.
Like actually getting up and moving around the outside? Or
No. I have Hearst Arts style terrain.
Oh, okay.
Well, mainly for like a 3.5 style tabletop RPG.
I think that's a good point, Angela, because like you could repurpose natural environments to like be terrain. So like a like cool gnarled stick could be like a giant log that is now in your way, or like an interesting rock could be your mountain or cliff face or something.
But you were saying, Troy, with the terrain you brought outside.
No, I'm just thinking of all the great possibilities that you guys are just taking us down there on that little road. I mean, I'm going to start stealing the fern plants outside the garage. I would say that pencils are preferable to pens because of the heat. Pens tend to explode. And my experience as an old sports reporter was that even if it rains, a pencil's still going to make a mark on a sheet of paper.
Mm-hmm.
I think you should, though, prepare for distractions, everything from bugs. So have a Citronella candle going.
Be prepared for the wind to pick up at the most inopportune moment.
That's why you clamp the character sheet to a clipboard. And you're probably going to have an agreement among the other players that you want to keep page referencing and book referencing to a very minimum. That you're really going to go with some GM fiat for most things. Even if it's, you know, monster statistics or something like that for your regular fantasy role play. You're just going to, these are the monsters. You've got a rough idea of how things go. We'll just wing it a little bit. And I don't think that's going to affect the outcome or the experience at all. because you're getting the benefit of playing outside and having that sort of fun. Some people have had success, I know, using plastic sheets to hold any of the paper materials. In most times, that's okay. When it gets really hot, though, sometimes those get a little tacky. Taylor, do you have any suggestions on outdoor play?
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit about what you said with like campfire games, with the visibility, in being creative with how you actually run your games. So it might mean changing your system or like playing a different game, but still keeping up your story. So a couple years ago for the 200-word RPG, I wrote a game that's specifically supposed to be played around a campfire where you can't really see character sheets. And it's like a debrief activity for once your characters are done with an adventure or a dungeon. And you play around the campfire just as your characters would sit around a campfire afterwards and kind of debrief about what happened. And you just kind of freeform talk about things. And when you can't talk of something or you're having trouble thinking, you get up and put a log on the fire and ask someone else to talk about their experience. So it's like being creative with how you think about what a game is, or how you look at the activities of what your game needs. So like, you don't need character sheets or dice to play a role-playing game. Or just saying like, hey, I want to have this experience outside or tell a story, and being okay with it being more casual. Like, not everything needs to be a long campaign or like sweeping epics. Like, you can play a story about, and this is a great game that I want to recommend to people, especially in the winter, because we've been talking about a lot of outdoor gaming in like the summer or spring or fall when the weather's nice. But Ara Bell has a really fantastic game called Mary Mandelhouse Loves the Snow. And it's about a couple who competes in a snowball throwing contest every year. And the wife has started falling in romantic love with the concept of snow. And you get to like explore affection, like relationships, competition, and like action just by tossing snowballs at each other. And like reframing what your idea of like a gaming session needs to be, I think, is really important, because you're not going to be like slaying orcs or telling an epic story. You're not going to be leveling up, but you can still have like a really meaningful experience with your friends and tell a really cool story that way.
Well, one of the things you kind of mentioned there was the, you know, like, even if it is your long campaign, taking your characters and having those quieter moments that the characters would have, you know, around a campfire or something along those lines.
Yeah.
Because I find that sometimes the quieter moments can get easily forgotten in the longer, you know, traditional style game campaigns. And I think those are just as important for, you know, still keeping those emotional ties to the characters and the story strong.
Well, that really works if you're camping or having an outdoor activity with your core group. And it sort of replicates the sort of out-of-table play that sometimes occurs when there's an exchange of emails about what you said was a debrief of a session. But here you're getting to do it amongst a campfire. And that's certainly a lot more fun than exchanging emails.
Yeah. You know, nothing against the exchanging emails. I think that's important and can help do a lot to fill in the gaps in between the actual sessions. But getting to do it in person with that fire crackling, you know, in the center of everyone is just really cool. And besides, there's nothing like the smell of a good bonfire.
Yeah.
One of the things about campfire games I was going to mention and keep in mind when you suggest doing a game is that I like the campfire experience, and maybe it's because I've been hanging around Boy Scouts for so long. I have two sons that are Boy Scouts. The campfire experience has a lot of moments, and a campfire is not one thing. There's a time for skits. There's a time for popping popcorn. There's a time for a game. There's a time for songs. And I think that the idea of a very brief role play experience, in that you're just taking up 10 or 15 minutes and then moving on to something else, makes it more of a banquet.
Yeah.
Do you get what I'm going for there?
Yeah. I think we've hit a lot of good points. Are there anything, any last thoughts you guys want to include?
I have two, and I'll just make them quick. The first is another shout out of a game that I would be upset if I didn't mention, which is written by a friend named Dave LaPrue, and it's called For the Birds. And Emily Carboss included it in her RPG Theory July last year. But it's a story about feeding birds. And as you feed these birds, you try to tell as complete a story as you possibly can before the bird flies away. But when that bird does, that story is over. And so it's an exercise in being okay with not having closure with stories. And it's also just like a really good exercise to like get out and feed birds. And there's a nice little disclaimer that you should never feed birds bread because it's very bad for them. And sometimes it can swell in their bodies and be gross. So it's equal parts story exercise and environmental PSA. And then the second is that I wanted to talk about a game that I had written for John Harness's 280 character RPG contest on Twitter a while back, which is a game that uses fishing as its mechanic. So like if you are looking for outdoor games, be creative in what you think of as like the backbone of your game and tell stories about what happens when you throw that lure into the water.
That's really cool. Is that game available anywhere where people could go find it?
It is. It's on Twitter at Leviathan Files using the hashtag 280RPG.
What about you, Troy? Any last words? Any last thoughts?
No, it seems like we've covered quite a bit of this subject.
Okay, let's get into our outro. This show is funded by the Gnome Stew Patreon. You too can become a Patreon backer by following the Patreon link on the Gnome Stew website to the Gnome Stew Patreon. This ad brought to you by that burning orb of yellow in the sky wanting to cook you to a crisp. Don't forget your gnome-approved SPS 386 sunscreen, guaranteed to keep you as untouched by the sun as if you'd stayed in your basement. If you're enjoying the Gnomecast, you'll probably like many of the other Misdirected Mark shows. Here's one to check out.
Pandas Talking Games. Phil and Senda answer your questions about RPGs from the perspective of one-shots and campaigns with some panda silliness.
You can find all of us at GnomeStew.com, at GnomeStew on Twitter, and GnomeStew on Facebook. Troy, where else can we find you on the internet?
My blog is thedungeondelver.wordpress.com, except no substitutes. That's the Dungeon Delver. I generally hang out on Facebook on a couple of groups now, DMs Guild Fan Club and DMs Guild Creators. I do have a Twitter address, but I'll send out the disclaimer that it's generally used for the day job, so you won't be finding much game conversation there.
How about you, Taylor?
Yeah, so you can find me living and breathing on Twitter at Leviathan Files, and you can find everything else that Riverhouse Games does at riverhousegames.com.
And you can find me at Twitter, at Orikes13, O-R-I-K-E-S-13, and hang out in various other, like, Misdirected Mark communities and Gnome Stew-related areas. You can find me. So, do you guys think we avoided the stew this week?
I think that we didn't avoid it, but we're on the other side of it. So we're boiling the stew around a nice warm campfire outside when the stars are out.
Gnomecast is hosted by Misdirected Mark Productions, the media arm of Encoded Designs.
Okay, Troy, just talk a little bit.
I have no idea what you're talking about.